Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Fitness is no walk in the park anymore. The 7-minute workout, P90X, CrossFit, Insanity, they're all high-profile fitness programs, high-intensity workouts that promise less can be more. More pain, and promoters argue, more gain. What are the facts? We'll dive in this hour on Point Exercise, hard and fast. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. Is high-intensity exercise your answer? 7 minutes CrossFit? Has it given you one of those super ripped bods? Who's it for? Is it for everybody? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Turn in the TV. In recent years, you have not been able to miss it. The promotional ads all over the place. Here's just one. P90X fitness guru Tony Horton pushes P90X users through a series of high-intensity workouts.
Breaking a sweat on abs.
Core, abs, heart, lungs. Look at the sweat coming off that boy.
Get up there, come on. Oh, that is P90X plus. Oh, that's the way to work. What isn't working?
Can you feel the burn and the testimonials and the hot bods that result? We hear about them and see them all the time. Insanity user L&M success story has had over 100,000 views, according to Beachbody, the company that makes the Insanity and P90X workouts. Here's home video footage of her story from one of their promotional videos.
I'm now a size 11 and 12 compared to when I was a size 17 and 18. I've never had, you know, a flat stomach, never in my life. So this is all new to me. I never thought that I could do this. I've never been this kind of a person, and I love myself right now. I love myself.
Love myself. People diving in like crazy on this, and lots of heads turning. 7-minute workout we heard recently, and it almost seemed too good to be true. Well, let's see. Joining us now from New York is Chris Jordan. He's co-developer of the 7-Minute Workout, showed up in the American College of Sports Medicine's Health and Fitness Journal this month, then blew up in the New York Times. Chris Jordan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Hi, Tom. Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you here. And with us from San Diego, California, Jessica Matthews. She's an exercise physiologist from the American Council on Exercise, professor of kinesiology, health, and nutrition at MiraCosta College. Jessica Matthews, welcome to you as well.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Kinesiology? Can you help me out with, is that right?
Kinesiology, you
okay,
got it.
Okay, thank you. Chris Jordan, that little bit of your 7-minute workout that made it into the Times got shared all over the place. Everybody reading it sort of shaking their heads, but maybe thinking, oh, wouldn't that be great? 7 minutes and I can be ripped like the stuff I see on TV. What exactly are you suggesting in 7 minutes? What kind of workout?
Well, we've been overwhelmed with the amount of media attention we've received from our original article in the American College of Sports Medicine. But I need to put this in context.
Please.
The original design that I created actually about 10 years ago is based upon high-intensity training, which we know has been around for a long period of time. But high-intensity training is not for beginners, and I think most people would agree with me there. These are hard, vigorous workouts, really for the intermediate or advanced exerciser. And there's a chance, there's a risk that someone, a beginner, might try these workouts without appropriate guidance and get themselves possibly injured. So, you know, one thing we recommended in our original article is that these workouts aren't for everyone, and anyone that's interested should get pre-screened medical clearance and go and see a certified personal trainer or fitness instructor to get guidance on the first time they go around, at the very least.
Okay, duly noted, be forewarned. It's not if you're just getting off the couch for the first time in years. And yet, there's something awfully appealing about it, even for people who may be fitness freaks, the idea of a 7-minute workout, and you don't need any equipment in what you're presenting here, just a floor and a wall and the weight of your body to work with. Can you describe the workout for us, Chris?
Yeah, actually, the workout is really a 20-minute workout, but it got picked up as a 7-minute workout based upon one circuit. The circuit is a great combination of aerobic exercises and resistance exercises like push-ups and squats. It's deliberately designed around high-intensity training to provide, you know, a short, intense workout that can be done just about anywhere. You know, a wall, a floor, and chairs, you noted, is all that you need. This could be done in a hotel room, for example, where I am right now. And it was designed deliberately for what we call at the Human Performance Institute corporate athletes, those business executives who have very little time, who travel a lot, and often one of the first things they skip at the end of the day is that workout. So this could be done easily in a hotel room. But we do recommend 2 to 3 circuits, not one. So this is more like a 20-minute vigorous workout.
So we're already learning it's 7 times 3 here. So that gets us up to 21. Not quite as magical, but nevertheless. And what's at the heart of it? What is the texture of the workout that makes the short, fast approach work, Chris?
Well, it's the idea of this minimal rest between exercises and a combination of aerobic-type exercises and resistance exercises that increases the intensity, makes it more challenging, and with the minimal rest between exercises, keeps the heart rate up, maintains the intensity. And as we know from the U.S. Physical activity guidelines, that vigorous workouts can give similar results as more moderate intensity workouts in half the time. So it's just elevating and utilizing the research we already know around vigorous exercise while still keeping it within the safe guidelines of, you know, 20 minutes of vigorous exercise 3 times a week on when we recommend non-consecutive days for this workout, of course.
Jessica, there's the heart of the assertion that you can do this in a concentrated, high-intensity, shorter time. I guess instead of the sort of lap after lap or mile after mile of jogging along, does the science support that, Jessica?
The science definitely does support it. And I think Chris did a really nice job mentioning the fact that research studies have shown that not only is this high-intensity interval training style approach effective, but it does have many of the same benefits as those continuous moderate intensity exercise bouts as well. So I think it's important, you know, for the listeners to hear that, because we often tend to, in the fitness industry and, you know, with individuals looking for that, I'll call it a quick fix, we tend to let the pendulum swing oftentimes in one direction, and we sort of forget about what all the other things are out there that research also supports. So the science is absolutely there that high-intensity interval training does produce great results, but it is important to note that so does moderate, continuous, steady-state exercise.
I want to know how that works. It's being promoted very heavily. People making big money promoting this stuff. Here's a little one of those videos for the Asylum workout from the makers of P90X and Insanity. Here's trainer Sean Thompson, Sean T, leading one of these intense workouts.
Crazy height. Mad speed. Insane agility. If you're ready to release your inner athlete, commit yourself to the Asylum.
I know you're dying. I know you're burning. Go, there it is. That's the sprint at the end. Push.
This is a whole new ball game right here, and we're going for it.
Crazy height, mad speed. Physiologically, Jessica, what's going on when you do high-intensity, minimum rest interval exercise? What's happening?
Absolutely. So Chris touched on this already. You are certainly, you know, improving, and especially we see with these different style of workouts from CrossFit to P90X to Insanity, as you just mentioned, we're seeing a combination of not only aerobic and also anaerobic exercise, but also a combination with resistance training. So you're really getting a combination of, you know, efforts all working the body to, you know, do things such as the studies have shown improving, you know, decreasing blood pressure, improving overall body composition. That's been one of the big touted benefits. So essentially, improving body composition means decreasing body fat. That's the draw, right? People want this sculpted, lean physique. The studies have supported that, of course, high-intensity interval training does provide that. There's numerous other benefits as well. You know, they've shown, actually, which is interesting to note, because many times we think of doing something high intensity as being something many people won't enjoy. But I do find it interesting that they did do a research study that actually found that many individuals actually reported a higher satisfaction with exercising at a higher intensity, so a higher enjoyment level, as opposed to exercising at a more moderate, continuous, steady state.
Well, let me ask you, a lot of people clearly want it. They see these images of gorgeous bodies on TV and the big sweat going on and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars pouring into these things. But what about, is this about being ripped? I mean, that is that sculpted lean physique, or is it about being fit? Are those really the same thing, Jessica?
They are and they aren't. And I think this is the question I always like to get back to, you know, when different trends and, you know, things become popular in the fitness world, is really getting back to what exactly is exercise designed to do. So you've probably heard, I'm sure, Tom, the buzzword functional training. That was, you know, all of it's still a buzz in the industry. But this notion of what exactly, why are we exercising? And the reality is, at the end of the day, exercise is supposed to be designed to help us to function more efficiently in our activities of everyday life.
Move, so, just move with more strength and agility.
Absolutely. And so that's what I think is important, you know, as we start to explore this high intensity notion and everything has to be high impact and high intensity. We really need to get back to the root of what exercise is designed to do. And you said it perfectly. It really is about increasing our amount of movement in our days and enhancing our overall quality of life.
Well, is that the same as going for being ripped, being just, you know, perfectly sculpted, or is it different?
I think that it's different. I think that, you know, certainly people can have different goals that fall on the complete spectrum of, you know, health and fitness. Some people, you know, may be looking for that sculpted physique, the six-pack abs. But in all honesty, at a time when, you know, we're facing an obesity crisis in our country, we really need to be focusing on increasing awareness for being more physically active and moving more.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the 7-minute workout, CrossFit, P90X, Insanity, and the promise of high-intensity exercise, the high-speed, high-intensity path, they say, to fitness, to buffdom. Chris Jordan is with us from New York, co-developer of the 7-minute workout. He's a physical therapist and certified strength and conditioning specialist, director of exercise physiology at the Johnson & Johnson's Human Performance Institute in Orlando, Florida. New York Times picked up on his 7-minute workout. So did one of the big health and fitness scientific magazine journals, and everybody's jumping in and looking at it now. Jessica Matthews is with us from San Diego, an exercise physiologist for the American Council on Exercise. 800-423-8255 is our number. Chris, what about this question of what we're exercising for? Whether we're exercising for, you know, function or for that look, that ripped look?
I think that's a fantastic question. Jessica answered, I think, very well. I think it's a very important point here that we just want to get people more active. That's my passion, and I know it's the passion of many other exercise physiologists. I think a lot of people do look for that quick fix, and we've seen the gyms get very busy in the new year as people try those New Year's resolutions, but they don't often stick or last. I think what is more compelling and more long-lasting and more sustainable is that the way exercise and increased fitness improves the quality of your life. I mean, the amount of energy people tend to have as a consequence of exercising on a regular basis can make them feel better and, of course, improve the quality of their life, and often is more sustainable than driving for that buff body or that six-pack. So, you know, at the Institute, we focus on helping our corporate athletes, as we call them, exercise on a regular basis to improve their energy levels and be the best they can be for those things that really matter in their life. And that's a very compelling and a very powerful, sustainable reason to exercise.
Well, let me ask you about the path to that here. So I wonder, what is the difference? And we'll look at some of these commercial things as well. But your 7-minute workout, and you say times three, so 21 minutes here, and it's got 12 pieces to it, and some of them really straightforward. I mean, jumping jacks and sitting against the wall, push-up, crunches, step up onto a chair, squat, you know, a sort of the plank, or running in place with knees up high, lunges. If I do your 12 steps really fast with that brief interval between, I do it three times, so I got 21 minutes here. What's the benefit of that versus a nice, I don't know, 5-6 mile jog, let's say, Chris?
Well, you know, as Jessica mentioned, you may get similar benefits from both workouts, but often we found that for our clients and for many individuals, they're time constrained, and the option of going for an hour-long run, for example, at a moderate intensity is just not an option. And that could be the same for a busy executive to a single parent who has to look after, you know, three children. So having an option that is shorter in time that provides similar benefits is a great, desirable factor, as long as the workout is safe and appropriate. So similar results in less time is one factor. But as also Jessica mentioned, these workouts are often quite enjoyable. And it may be because of the vigorous, challenging nature of them. It may be because they're also shorter. But if you enjoy something more, you're more likely to stick to it for the long term. So that's a very important factor, too.
Jessica, what about moderate exercise? I mean, a lot of people, you know, they'll go for that nice jog, they'll go to the gym, and they've got a sort of leisurely routine with intense parts that they'll go through for an hour and a half or something. Is this focus on intensity and speed, is it implying or is it a critique of moderate exercise?
I think really, I mean, they both provide great benefits. That's the take-home message that I always, you know, will mention to individuals. So as you mentioned, Tom, if somebody has an established routine of physical activity and it involves, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 60 minutes of moderate, you know, steady state exercise, continue doing that. There's great benefits to that. And Chris touched on the importance of adherence. At the end of the day, whatever we choose to do in terms of being physically active, in order to reap all these great benefits, whether it's high intensity training, whether it's moderate, continuous, steady state, we have to regularly stick with it. So we have to have adherence in order to reap the benefits.
I want to hear from our listeners who are out there trying this, that, and the other thing. Stephen in Boston's calling. Hi, Stephen, you're on the air. What's your experience, Stephen?
Hey, Tom. I did P90X at age 42, actually, and I can tell you that it wasn't really about getting the ripped six-pack or, you know, that whole scenario. It was really about the challenge. And I went from 217 pounds to 176 pounds in about 6 months. And I think it's one of the greatest things I ever did, frankly.
Describe it for us for people who have never touched it or even maybe seen it, Stephen. What's it like?
Well, frankly, the first week I wanted to die. You know, it was way over my head in terms of what I was physically capable of and those kinds of things. But as time went on, it really became a situation where every new exercise became a challenge for me and became an opportunity for me to sort of test what I was capable of at age 42 beyond, you know, I've run 10Ks and,
yeah,
and 5Ks and things like that. And
hey, what was going on when you wanted to die? I mean, you're there. I assume you've got the DVD plugged in and you're, I don't know, in some room and you're going after it. What is it that made you want to die doing it?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I think the funny thing is that the initial set of exercises, really, if you don't have a good base of physical activity and things like that, it's very, very difficult to do. But the rewards that you get from the next couple of weeks are just off the charts. You know, I mean, I can honestly say from my experience that getting through the first week was one of the best physical challenges I ever had. And, you know, it's following through the whole program.
Yeah.
Over the past 3 months, it's really been...
Sounds like it worked really for you. 217 to 176. And what about keeping it up? Do you think this is something that you can do perpetually, or is it, you'll just get it when you want to get that beach bod cranked up for your hot summer?
You know, it's funny. It's not about getting the hot bod cranked up for summer. It's really more about working with my physical therapist at the gym that I work with,
yeah,
to kind of keep those things that I learned in P90X to the front of mind. And then, you know, stretching it out with things like running, doing long distance endurance things, you know, those kinds of things.
Stephen, the guys at P90X must love you. I mean, you're kind of just exactly what they spend big money to advertise this. You're telling us it worked for you, and that's great. Carry on, man. It sounds terrific. Let me see what else we've got here. But thank you and good luck. Jacob in Waterbury, Vermont. Jacob, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question is regarding these high-intensity exercises. You often see them marketed as a good way to get into the exercise regimen and things like that. I'm curious as to how many of these exercise regimens have a dietary component, because that's something that people are often enthusiastic about going into the exercise world more than they are about dieting for their body. And I'm curious as to how many of these are focusing on exercise at the expense of that, or how many of them do have a dietary component.
It's a great question. Jessica, how about it? I think a lot of these, they also push a diet side. What is it all salmon and kale here, or what about the dietary side?
It's certainly, and it's a great question that comes up because we do know fitness and nutrition go hand in hand. You will see many of these programs will have a nutritional component to it. So the at-home programs or P90X, they do include a nutritional guide. P90X2, if anyone's familiar with that one, they actually kind of took a different approach in putting together that nutritional guide and made it more about providing options and choices and letting people kind of put a meal together, you know, using lists of different foods that would then, you know, would support the great work that they're doing, you know, being physically active. Also in the CrossFit world, you hear very commonly people talk about the paleo diet. That seems to be something, again, it's not something that you have to do if you're following CrossFit, but many CrossFitters have opted to, you know, take that type of nutritional approach. What I like about all of them, what I will say, of course, I always recommend working with a registered dietitian if you're looking for a specific meal plan to follow. That's the most qualified individual to provide you with that information.
Okay.
But what I do like about these nutritional plans is they do place emphasis on consuming more whole foods. So less processed foods, more whole foods, which is something we can all get behind.
Let me get Sandy in here, Middlebury, Vermont. Sandy, thank you for calling. It's great to have you. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Sandy. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I'm almost 73 years old, and I have myotonic dystrophy, but I and that led to my having a pacemaker, and I ride my bicycle 8,000 miles a year.
That sounds pretty great at 73 with a pacemaker. What do you think of doing it super intense instead of those nice miles on your bike? Or is that your intensity?
Well, I sometimes ride fast, but usually it's cruise and schmooze with my friends. And I will ride from Middlebury to Montreal in a day. It's 152 miles. And I can't ride fast, but I make it there in 9 to 10 hours.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a formula that works pretty well right there. I mean, Chris, this is no 7-minute workout that Sandy's got, but he's 73, he's got a pacemaker. It sounds pretty good.
You know, the most important thing, which I think is great, is Sandy's exercising on a regular basis, and that's the ultimate goal we want to help people achieve, is get this exercise program that works for you and get it on a regular and consistent basis. And I love to run. And if I have time, I'll do a long run at the weekends, and I really enjoy it. But if I don't have time, like this morning in my own hotel room, I'll do my 20-minute body weight workout and still get my consistent regular program of exercise in. So great. Whatever you can do, fantastic, and good for Sandy.
Body weight workout because you're just using the weight of your body as resistance. Chris Jordan, Jessica Matthews, stand by. I want to welcome Justin Lin into our conversation from Irvine, California, physical therapist, certified strength and conditioning specialist, athletic trainer. He's got a PT clinic there at Rehab and Revive in Orange County, California. Justin Lin, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you here. You have been watching this high-intensity sort of craze that's really been roaring along here, and you've got some concerns about it. What are they, Justin?
Sure. I just want to start off. I know I'm going to be the voice of reason. And I believe that I'm in agreement with everyone else. I think Jessica and Chris have made some good points that I was going to stress on as well. But I think the main point, and I do want to stress that and point out that I'm very excited about all the innovative exercises as a health professional, as a fitness professional for 14 years as well, that, you know, anything new that's going to get people moving, I think that's the goal for the whole health community as a whole. So before I talk about, you know, the things that do concern me, something like the safety. I think that's what we want to stress, is we want to be fit and we want to be well. Just because you're fit doesn't mean you're well, and vice versa. Just because you're well, you're not going to be fit. So we got to bridge the gap. And I think what we're always looking for is consumer safety. And at the end, with consumer safety, when people can do this for a long time or have some consistency or compliance, then the benefits will be reaped.
What's the difference between fitness and wellness, then, if you're drawing a distinction, Justin?
Sure. Being fit, you know, I think goes towards physical activity, strength, muscle, endurance, and power. And being well has to do with more the other realms, your emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual I think also being pain-free is a big part of wellness.
So you've written about the insanity workouts and the high-intensity interval training and all this. You've written here, you wrote in the notice, I want to tell you that all these programs keep me in business as a physical therapist. What do you mean by that?
So I was stressing the point that we got to do things safely, and I think 40% right now of my clientele either are coming in to see me because they've injured their lower backs, either spraining it, even herniating some discs, as well as hurt their knees, shoulders, necks with some nerve impingements. So
and I hurting believe, them in the process of doing these high intensity workouts?
Yes, actually, a lot of times it's, you know, they'll attribute my patients and even myself as a collegiate athlete at City, doing these Olympic lifts. I incurred a bunch of injuries that I'm still currently dealing with and trying to rehab myself. But I think the problem is not necessarily the design of the program, but more of the delivery. It's kind of like if you look at shoe manufacturing, you know, the design of the shoe is really good, but maybe the manufacturing out in the Philippines or Indonesia isn't coming out right. So, you know, some of it's like the delivery, maybe the trainer's education or the ability to scrutinize every movement. I've been, like I said, I've been doing 14 years of personal training on the side as well. And I find that even with my one pair of eyes, you know, just focusing on one person is difficult enough, let alone 2, 3, or a class of 20.
What kind of risks show up, Justin Lin, in high-intensity training? What are the vulnerabilities that get exposed?
So some of the ones that are highly noted, I think, with CrossFit was that rhabdomyolysis, which is basically the breakdown of healthy musculoskeletal tissues or cells, and then it basically goes in your bloodstream, backs it up, and there's chances of causing something severe as kidney failure. I think other than that, you have the orthopedic concerns with the herniated disc. I've got a recent patient that comes in. I believe she has spondylosis, which basically is the ligaments, a broken down set of ligaments in the spine. And it just keeps things more unstable. And just watching her, I saw a picture of her doing a 200-pound squat. She's 24 years old, and you know, it's blown out now. And just looking at the picture of the squat, like I said, showed me that, you know, there's so much extension in her lower back that I don't think any of the trainers were realized or discerning enough to stop her. And that's really, you know, we want to be advocates of consumer safety, and that way we can promote health and wellness.
Yeah, you're right. A lot of these programs are designed to fatigue in many ways. You write, fatigue yields poor stabilization to moving joints. Poor stabilization yields injury. Also, that muscle strength and mass adapt and change more quickly than tendons. You say, give your tendons time to grow or they won't keep up, and you may be tearing them up, Justin.
That's correct. You know, it takes as few as even a few hours to make some physiological changes. I think that was in one of the articles the producer sent me. And what happens is the tendons and ligaments or the connective tissues need to take time to grow with the muscles. The muscle belly can grow really fast itself and produce a lot of strength. And when that happens, then, you know, you're going to be pulling away from the bone and other and stress other structures.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the 7-minute workout, CrossFit, P90X, Insanity, and the promise of high-intensity exercise. Chris Jordan is here from the Human Performance Institute in Orlando, Florida, co-developer of the 7-minute workout that's gotten a lot of attention lately, or at least 7 minutes times three, maybe. Jessica Matthews is with us from MiraCosta College in California, joins us from San Diego. Justin Lin is with us, physical therapist out of Irvine, California, owns the Rehab and Revive in Orange County, California. Got a lot of people writing into us here. You know, here Scott says, Chris, he worked on your 7-minute workout, picked it up off our webpage, and you've got these 12 steps, but he can't do all of them. He's got a bad shoulder. So some of the push-up and rotation and maybe the side plank is tough for him. What if he can't do all the steps, Chris? What do you do?
Well, that's a great question. Of course, this workout is only one sample of many workouts we've created at the Institute. But the best thing you can do is really get some help from a certified professional. If you go to a local fitness center, YMCA or something like that, and ask a certified fitness professional to help them, guide them through alternative modified exercises that they can do in a safe, effective manner. There are many exercises you can do that will allow someone to work around, not through, an injured part of their body or a part of the body that shouldn't be stressed. So it's really about getting professional guidance, and that's fairly easy if you go to a good local fitness center.
Yeah. Jessica Scott is also asking about warm-up and cool-down. When speed is part of this, you know, efficiency, you get it done quick, you don't have a million hours in a day. What about warm-up and cool-down if you're doing, you know, short burst, high intensity exercise, Jessica?
Absolutely. The dynamic warm-up, and it can kind of denote what a dynamic warm-up is, that's going to be key when we're talking about high intensity training. So a dynamic warm-up essentially should be preparing the body functionally for the exercises that are going to come during that work or conditioning phase of the workout. So that could include, you know, doing some basic primary movement patterns such as half squats, doing things like cat and cow pose or cat camel, it's often called, just beginning to warm the spine. There's a number of different exercises. Bird dog's a great one where you're on hands and knees and extend opposite arm and leg, really promoting core stabilization, that spinal stability that's so important. I think that something I've heard Chris and also Justin touch on this, and I think the emphasis on, you know, noting the fact that this workout, a high intensity workout, there isn't a one size fits all approach to this. It will certainly vary from one person to the next. And I do want to mention that high intensity doesn't always mean high impact. I think we've gotten to the point where we're thinking high intensity means we have to jump and do plyometric exercises. Yeah. It doesn't. And Justin really touched on a really important point about the education of the fitness professionals that are, you know, teaching and educating students and clients. And the ACE integrated fitness training model, what we've talked about is the importance of providing first joint stability and mobility, then focusing on movement training. Some of the things that you see actually in that 7-minute workout from Chris, you know, planks, side planks, push-ups, those basic primary movement patterns, squats are another one. Before we even get into load, before we even start to lift anything, yeah, it's so important that we're moving efficiently and safely.
Of course, to keep track of that when you're almost delirious in the pain and sweat of some of these workouts can be tough. But Justin here, Maria writes to us on Facebook. She says, I love the Shaun T Insanity workouts. I used to run marathons, do Bikram yoga, exercise 2 hours a day. I never got the results that I've gotten with this workout. You're putting up all kinds of caution signs here, Justin, saying don't be fooled by these insane and inane programs. But people flock to them, and not everybody, but a lot of them really like them, Justin.
Hi, Tom. As they should, I do believe that these great exercises, like I said, are really innovative. They're going to keep people engaged. And the problem that I see is that a lot of beginners are going through these exercises. It sounds like the Facebook reader had put it that, you know, she's been doing yoga and just has been really active. So she sounds like she's been an athlete for some point in time, mm-hmm, and continues to maintain this wellness. And so she hit a plateau, invited this program in, and there she got the results. So I think it just pushes, and we're always looking to progress our body, whether it's in physical therapy or fitness and health. We're always trying to progress it moderately, safely, and then move on to the next level. So I think she did the right thing, and it does work for some, and that's why it's popular, and it's going to continue to be popular as long as people can be compliant and progress slowly and steadily. That's my main point of this article.
Justin writes, don't be fooled. They may only work for a short time, but the price you'll pay later may be high. I'm going to leave these workouts, he writes, for the athletes who are already training in this explosive manner and military personnel, which many of these programs are adapted from. Renee in Charleston, South Carolina. Renee, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I think one of the dangers of, and I can only speak for CrossFit, I haven't taken the other classes, is it's highly competitive. When you're in there, there is a great motivation as a group. You're competing against each other. there's often a time element. You're posting your results. And because of that, I think that a lot of people, myself included, push myself beyond what was really safe for me. Beginners are in there with advanced people. I ended up doing box jumps I had no business doing that I'd never done before, and subsequently torn meniscus, and I'm now out from any kind of exercise of that nature.
Boy, that's not the way you want to go. Chris, what about Renee's story? You know, competitive class, pretty soon she's doing stuff she's never done before, and boom, the meniscus is torn.
Well, I think that's the double-edged sword we have with some of these workout programs, is that the competitive nature can provide a great source of motivation. But as mentioned, it may push you beyond what would be safe and appropriate levels of exercise intensity that you should go. And that's why it's just so important to find out with a certified professional, you know, what is safe and appropriate for you. An exercise program should be safe, first of all. And then, of course, it should be effective in terms of getting you results. But that safety aspect, the form and technique, the appropriate warm-up, the appropriate cool-down, incredibly important. And that may be lost when you're in a very competitive environment. So I feel for the caller, but it's sometimes the consequence of that competitive nature.
Nice and easy sometimes does it, Renee. Thanks for your call. Rex in Salt Lake City, Utah. Rex, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I've coached both girls and boys in basketball in high school, and I was wondering if some of these programs have been studied long term. I know you've already discussed repetitive motion injuries, but I know fitness has evolved because now they lift weights on game days, which I would have never done back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
But I know CrossFit is intense, but I was wondering if there had been any long-term studies of these intense exercise programs.
Jessica, how about it? You know, they've blown up big just in the last few years. Do we know? I mean, I've got listeners writing in here saying, look, you know, I was a big runner and blew out my knees. People have learned that wonderful exercise, if you're not careful over time, can come back and bite. What about this high-intensity interval training model over time, Jessica?
Right. Specifically, I know many of the studies that I've reviewed are looking at a set duration for whatever particular facet of high intensity training they're looking at, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. I know there was a CrossFit study specifically that was conducted earlier this year. Again, they're not long term studies, and maybe Justin or Chris may be able to note some specific ones that are longer term. But what we are seeing, and I think it's interesting that this caller notes, you know, the science is always evolving, just like if we can think back to the days we were in physical education classes, our warm-up, what we did, that static stretching where we were just holding those stretches with a body that was not warmed whatsoever, we've moved away from that. So we do see, you know, that the science does evolve as new research becomes available. What we are seeing, though, and actually Chris touched on this right at the beginning of the show, is high-intensity interval training, though it's gained a lot of buzz and momentum in the last few years, it's not entirely new. So there have been research studies, not so much long-term studies, you know, over the course of years and years, but they've done, you know, numerous studies that have been, you know, reviewed together collectively and have shown benefits. I think the key message here is that there is not a one-size-fits-all approach. And the caller who mentioned CrossFit, I think we need to be empowering fitness professionals, and something that the American Council on Exercise is doing is to provide individuals with progression and regression options for any exercise that we're going to be doing in a class-type format.
Hey, can we back up for a second to the static stretch? Is that not on anymore? What are you suggesting for a warm-up?
Yeah, so this is a big topic of debate, and there's, again, continuing new science that's emerging, but what has been shown over the last decade is that what is best suited for a warm-up is more of a dynamic approach to warming up. So as I mentioned previously, that's kind of preparing the body, it's increasing core body temperature, taking the joints through the full range of motion. It's basically giving your body, an easy way to think of it, is a preview of what's to come during the actual workout. The static stretching is fantastic. It's really best reserved for after the workout is done, while your body's nice and warm, your muscles are more pliable.
Okay.
So we reserve that now to the end of the workout. But it's interesting, as the science evolved, as I mentioned, we're now seeing that there's benefits too at the beginning of a workout before we do that dynamic warm-up. We're now seeing benefits to doing things like myofascial release. If you ever see people using foam rollers, tennis balls, different devices, those now research is showing is an important part of a warm-up for many people. So it's just important to keep up with the science, and that's something that ACE feels really strongly about is making sure both the professionals and the public are on the cutting edge of the scientific information.
He's the American Council on Exercise. Chris Jordan, what about Rex in Salt Lake City's question about long-term effects of this kind of high-intensity training, Chris?
Well, I think this is a very good question, and as Jessica put the point very clearly, this is a fact that one size doesn't fit all. It's a massive, really an issue of dose. Exercise is good for you. We know that in general, but too much of a good thing can hurt anyone, and it's getting the right dose for you as an individual. What is the safe dose of exercise that will give you the benefits without causing injury? And as Justin mentioned earlier, this is also an issue of recovery. To do a hard interval workout every single day of the week is asking for problems. We need to have some downtime. We need to have some recovery so the body's tissues can repair and grow and get ready for the next workout. So, you know, interval training and high-intensity training has been around for decades. It's clearly a very efficient approach to exercise, but it must be done with caution, it must be done safely, and you must get professional help to find out what is the right, safe, appropriate dose for you and get the recovery too.
Let me go to Shane in Lookout Mountain, Georgia. Shane, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I'm 56 years old, and when I was in my early to mid-40s, I was in great shape. I was going to the gym a couple of hours every day and running 5 miles, that kind of thing, and I was in really great shape. But over the last 10 years or so, I really didn't do too much. And so a couple of months ago, and even as recently as last month, I decided that I wanted to get back into exercise, and I decided that I would look into CrossFit. So I joined a CrossFit gym, and really, I mean, I did it, and there was aspects of it that I enjoyed, but the problem is that I just physically was not ready to do it. I mean, my body could not do what they were doing in there.
What were they asking you to do there, Shane? What was part of it? What challenged you? Like what?
Okay, like one of the exercises was we had to pick up a 100-pound medicine ball from the ground, pick it up, put it on your shoulders, walk 20 meters, then do 15 burpees, drop the ball, then do 15 burpees, then pick the ball up again, put it on your shoulders.
100-pound, okay, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, literally, I hurt my back doing that. I mean, I was, for a couple of days, I couldn't even hardly move, get in and out of bed, that kind of thing.
So what are you thinking of now, Shane? What's your conclusion?
Well, my conclusion is I think that while CrossFit is wonderful and those kind of high-intensity exercises are great, they are not for someone like me who is not physically fit. And I think that in order to join a gym like that, there should be some type of way that you can't join unless you meet a certain criteria.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Jessica, you know, this is a business, and they want people coming in. I'm not sure that there are, are these groups prepared to say, no, you shouldn't do this? Or is it, hey, put down the money, you're in, and let's go. 100-pound medicine ball and get going.
Now, I actually do have to give CrossFit a bit of kudos, though, over the last few years, because it's become so popular. Many of the CrossFits have started offering what they're calling a foundations course. So essentially, before someone can just sign up and just walk into any WOD or workout of the day, as they call it,
yeah.
They actually have to go through a foundations training. It's typically held on a weekend, on a Saturday. I know the one here in San Diego that I've actually been a part of. I always feel it's important to do something personally before I speak about it.
Yep.
So I have been through a CrossFit workout of the day, and this particular CrossFit offers this foundations training where really they first focus on providing people with an understanding of how to execute the movements properly before you're picking up anything. So there's no 100-pound medicine ball being used. They're really focusing on the mechanics of doing some primary movement patterns like squats, lunges, and actually making sure people are able to execute those movements without weight safely and effectively before they'll then give them the green light to go on to a workout of the day. So I do applaud them. Many of the CrossFit locations, it's not universal yet. It's not required at everyone, but many of them are starting to implement something like that.
So walk before you run. And what about a lot of listeners online on Facebook here, Bob and Katie are asking Jessica about things that are not so intense. Bob says, you know, he's a boomer. What about yoga? What about Tai Chi? Katie says, What about mental renewal? A long swim is, for me, a meditative experience. What about that side of exercise, Jessica?
Absolutely. And Justin actually touched on this before, this idea of wellness, right? More than just the physical, which is a key component, but the spiritual, the emotional. There's other components that ensure we lead a healthy, happy, active life for many years to come. I personally teach yoga and also practice yoga. There's many great benefits to that. Again, when it's level appropriate. Now, someone who's brand new to yoga, I wouldn't send them to an advanced level yoga class, just like I wouldn't send them to an advanced high intensity style workout. I do believe very firmly in a variety in terms of our physical activity. So having a variety of ways that we're being active and moving our bodies is certainly going to set us up for long-term success. And the people who commented on Facebook, I think finding what works for them, that's what's key. Something you enjoy and really can stick with long-term.
Well, step in nice and easy here. Soon you may be going full blast. Maybe that'll be you all ripped at the beach this summer. Or maybe you'll still be, maybe you'll be doing your yoga. Maybe you'll be doing your Tai Chi. Lots of ways to go. But we've learned a lot this hour about the high-intensity path, and I'm grateful to our guest for that, Justin Lin at Rehab and Revive in Orange County, California. Justin, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Chris Jordan, co-developer of the 7-Minute Workout at the Human Performance Institute in Orlando, Florida. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jessica Matthews, professor of kinesiology, health, and nutrition at MiraCosta College, joining us today from San Diego. Thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Tomorrow in this hour, the definitive history of heavy metal music. Don't miss it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.